Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
And welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren. And today on the show, we have Joe Slonia, Director of Sales and Marketing in the U.S. for Gramino Affinage and Selection. Joe's authenticity and passion for cheese and the cheese community are undeniable amongst his peers. Basically, we love him. Joe's strength lies in his sales and relationship building, and he is a driving force behind the Save the Emmentaler campaign. Joe, welcome to the show.
Kara, thank you for having me today. Such a joy to be here. Thank you.
I mean, third time's a charm. This is maybe your third time on the show?
Third time in like the past 8 years. I mean, a couple of those years, obviously like a time warp.
But, yeah. No, I mean, like, I love that you've been in this community for this amount of time. I knew you as a kid cheesemonger. You've always been an inspiration of mine. I'm so glad you're here on the show. This is like, I'm just so happy you're here.
That's very kind. Thank you very much. I mean, I think we're in the mutual admiration club. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to get into it because I was like, I have to get Joe on the show. I mean, I was going to have you on anyway, really. But then to see that you won an award, I'm just going to read out the stats on this. Amongst 4,434 cheeses from 42 countries, a bunch of your cheeses participated, but one of them was crowned the 2022-2023 World Champion at the World Cheese Awards. And you can say the name better than I can. I know it's the Gormino Legrare 12-month AOP Sirtois, but the first word is Wunderflügen. Am I close?
It's the dairy's name, Wunderflügen. Wunderflügen.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm probably even not saying it the perfect way, but Wunderflügen.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that win? I mean, that's a lot to be up against and be number one.
It was a pretty dramatic process, you know? The way this show contest is set up is there's a lot of guest judges that are brought in, I think over 200 give or take, and there's 98 tables full of cheese, and each table will produce a super gold winner, which go on to a final round of 98 finalists, and then out of the 98 there's 16 cheeses that are then chosen by the super jury,
mm-hmm.
which is I guess a more experienced, you know, specialized panel of judges. 16,
sure.
They all picked their favorite.
So you could see it happening. You saw the level ups. You were like, oh my God, we got through round one. Oh my God, we got through round two.
You're just never sure. I mean, there's one cheese we knew was ours because there was a blue no other real cheese looks like, and that was on the finals table. And there was a variety of Gruyères on there, and we were hoping one of them was ours. You just don't ever know really until the near the end where it's time to, but they put on a show almost like one of these singing type shows, like American Idol or
really
the voice, like there's a final 16, like a show where whoever's in attendance is in an auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
And what's dramatic about it is for that portion, there was a lot of awards given out, the golds and the super golds and the silvers and the bronze. But for that portion, you're just basically working your way up to one final winner. There's no categories at that point, and it's just all about who wins at that point. And so it was beyond dramatic and overwhelming. And
I feel like the pictures online explained it. I just felt like you were like hoisting like either a huge trophy or the cheese itself with the cheesemaker, and it was like all eyes on you guys. Moment.
It was the cameras turned, and when things were called, it was what felt to me like a chaotic moment. It is a moment I'll never, I'll never forget, because I woke up that day before in northern New Jersey. I drove to, I'm a regular guy. I work for Barmina. I was there just to enjoy the international community, meet all these amazing people, taste some things I never tasted, you know, bring my my taste bud and visual acuity up, you know, and practice that. And then to be at the end on the stage accepting that kind of honor for our cheesemaker and for our team, because the cheesemaker obviously needs to make a beautiful cheese, but then the affinage team also has something to do with the outcome for in order to be appreciated and judged. But, you know, put some wings on our feet, you know, which is amazing, but, you know, it's business as usual, not too long after that, but it was, I knew it was going to be business as usual not soon after, because we're going into the busy season, so I tried to soak it in as much as I could. It was beautiful to get all that energy, everybody being so happy.
Totally. And I mean, like, did the sales increase from this? Like, was there more awareness? So, like, people were just hitting you up like, hey, Joe, where can we buy this cheese? Did that work?
Yes, there was a lot of messages. And it's interesting because the cheese is, obviously, it's about this cheesemaker that won in this contest. But the profile is the Sirchois age. And in March, a different cheesemaker of ours won another world contest.
Right.
And so luckily there's enough of, and the planning around the win in March is what made us make sure we had enough for the busy season. We didn't expect to win the November one. And so for this cheesemaker, there was less of his cheese available.
Yeah.
More of, luckily, the other one. So one way or the other, someone got one or the other, in the end. But
they're both winners.
Yeah, yes, they are, and it's fun. It's a fun point to talk about. But in the end, you know, it's what happened at that contest for that day.
Well, no, I love that. Yeah, so you're mentioning the contest in Wales. We were talking about the World Cheese Awards, and then the Wisconsin one. How do you go about choosing and selecting a wheel for those kind of competitions? Because I know it's tasting and QA, but like, I don't know, like, it just seems like they're all good. So how do you make it happen for one special wheel?
Well, there's so much that goes into even selecting what can be, you know, aged deemed for each age, you know. It's not a random thing. There's an attrition, you know, in the selection process. So you're starting with mild wheels. It's mostly up to the affinage team, sometimes the cheesemaker's involved. In the case of the March contest, Michael Speaker, who won in March, he was involved in the selection process. But that happened at the Gormino in our Reichenbach bunkers. So collaboratively, he actually chose the wheel he wanted to enter. For this contest, I was told the team chose the wheel, which ultimately was entered by for Urs.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I was looking at his name online. So this is Urs Leuenberger?
Yep.
Did I get that right?
Yep, Urs Leuenberger.
Congrats to him from the U.S. This is, it seems like he's very talented.
He's very talented. He's also very humble, you know, as we all like to, I mean, it's wonderful to win these things, but, you know, we keep it real, though. I mean, it's, the cheese business is hard. These guys work so hard every day.
Yeah.
Right? And it's it's gratifying, and it kind of, it's validating. You know, and it was my honor to bring the trophy to his home.
Oh, my God. You got to do that?
Yeah. The association was going to, they asked me before I left the show, like, can we take that and engrave it for your cheesemaker? I'm like, I think I'm going to bring it home to the cheesemaker and let him engrave it. Like, I was not letting that thing out of my sight. I wanted to make sure I delivered it to him. So it was like this direct, you know, connection.
I feel like this is the Stanley Cup for cheese that's going on. We're just going to pass it to each other. We're going to travel to each other's homes and pass it along.
It kind of is. I mean, it should be that way. You know, I mean, it's good for all entire cheese community to be raising over time the bar.
Yeah.
Cheese profiles, our own experiences, our own taste buds progress and evolve.
Yep.
And what tastes delicious now, it might be different in 10 years. And hopefully it's just better work going forward, you know, for all the cheesemakers.
Yeah. So what was the dinner like at that guy's house when he brought home the trophy? Was there like a huge fondue, or maybe it was summer? I don't know.
It was simple. It was like an apéro in a way, but with a dessert. His wife made a beautiful cake, and we drank white wine with the cake and just stared at the coffee, stared at the trophy, and just was, it was just a, kind of intimate.
It's, hey, listen, I mean, it sounds like you know your cheesemakers. That's actually one of the questions about Gormino I was thinking about, because I wasn't sure exactly. So it's what is the business model there? It's a group of cheesemakers. Explain it to me, because I sort of looked at it online, but I was like, is it a cooperative? What is this? Is it like outside of the usual Swiss systems? Like, what is Gormino?
Yeah, so it's a team of cheesemakers and affineurs, but the cheesemakers are the owners of the company, right? They are the literal owners of Gormino. So it's 12 cheesemakers. 9 make Emmentaler AOP, 3 make Le Gruyere AOP. Within those dairies, there's some specialties that are small mountain cheeses. One of them's a blue cheese. One of them's a goat cheese. The collective effort, since they, like, we want them to concentrate on cheese making. So think of a restaurant. You have the kitchen and you have the front of the house. So they're the kitchen, and marketing and sales and affinage, the most important part, is done by a separate team. Once the cheeses spend the necessary time in the dairy, which they must spend, you know, in the dairy, but the AOP laws will require, you know, a minimum of 3 months for Emmental or a minimum of 4 months for Le Gruyere AOP before it can be moved to either of our sellers.
Interesting. So they're AOP cheesemakers and non-AOP cheesemakers maybe working together, or they're all AOP?
Well, the team is all AOP cheesemakers.
Oh, it is all AOP.
Yeah.
Okay,
so some of the cheeses that we trade on are what we call, they're a subset with it. So we have, our line is split into two. So affinage and selection will be reflecting our 12 dairies' work. And then we have cheese like the Sprints or the Valley Brebidou, which are qualified dairies that we work closely with. They're called our Select and Improve brand, but they're not technically part of the Gormino ownership. They're just close relationships, and we trade on those cheeses.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then in terms, what I read online was there's 2 affinage centers.
Yeah.
And are they, so I'm guessing, is this all like geographically close to each other?
Yeah, they're pretty close. Yeah,
okay.
You can drive back and forth, and the cheese moves can move back and forth depending on what needs to be done with the cheeses, because each seller will have certain advantages over the other. But the original facility, Langnau, is the capital of Emmental. It's 4 levels below. You know, there's 4 levels that go below ground, starting at ground level.
Jeez.
And, different atmospheres. And then, but, you know, primarily Emmentaler AOP and Gruyere will live there.
Wow.
And then on, in Reichenbach, it's what we call affinage in a mountain. It's quite literally in the mountain. So it's 2,300 feet above sea level. It's 450 feet deep inside, and then 650 feet below a pasture where rain can take 3 days to get down.
Wow.
It's at the foot of a glacial river, feeding a natural spring. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It already existed for military purposes post-World War II into the late 90s. It was the property of a private citizen. And then and the reason it became a property of a private citizen is normally it's the government went on it, but it got flooded at one point. So the government sold it to a private citizen. And then maybe 15 years later, that person was, talked with Gormino, and we needed a space. So it's
a win-win.
It's a win-win. And the cheese now, instead of housing munitions for the purposes of war, it now peacefully ages cheese. So what better way to improve the world than peacefully aging cheese?
What an amazing place to visit. I mean, the way you described it,
it's got a beautiful energy, especially to know that it was once one thing and now not that, and more peaceful things happening.
I envy. I have to.
You'll have to visit.
I have to get. I've never been to Switzerland.
I
may have said that on the program before. Switzerland, get me there. I don't know. No, it's one of those things I'd like to try and do at some point. Oh, I asked you about how cheeses are aging already and the system of it.
It's there's a lot to it, because the cheesemakers will have input too, you know, because they'll maybe tell our affinage team how any problems or issues they have. They'll report maybe weather impacting the dairy farmers. And along with the affineurs remembering what their cheese was like in the past year, is already starting an algorithm just for them. Don't forget, it's 12 cheesemakers. Not like we're keeping track of 50.
That's true.
So the intimate, they're like you got to imagine if you're doing this every day, you get bat-like sensitivities to listening, tasting. So even when I'm there for a couple of days, you start to understand how you can immerse yourself into doing this.
Yeah.
But it's still a talent, and to understand where the cheese, with that extra information from the cheesemaker, where the cheese can go or not go. So
they're communicating constantly.
Communicating constantly about each batch. I mean, it's their own interest to do that, right?
Yeah.
So the better we can sell the cheese at a more age profile means more money and more better work. Because our strategy is to be long ripening cheese. That's where our strengths lie. Mild cheese business is great. It's what can keep the lights on, but it's a very much more competitive, right? So you think of like a horse race or a marathon, right? Mm-hmm. All the racers are pretty much grouped together in the early part of the race, and everybody looks like they could be a winner. And then near the end of the race, there's only a few that could be out in front. And that's like, as you get more aged, it's more difficult to pull off. So if you have 40 wheels of Gruyere or 40 wheels of Emmentaler, maybe it could be 12 or 15 wheels that can go to reserve, but sometimes it's 6, sometimes it's 0. You don't know, but that's up to for the affinage team to decide. Once they start feeling the cheese dipping, they want to release it.
Wow.
The only certain cheeses that they can identify could be pushed to an older profile.
That's very cool. That's a great analogy for that, because I think I understand, like, for cheesemakers to age out the cheeses, it is so difficult. And, like, the money on the shelf concept, too. Like, so that's amazing that you have such talented cheesemakers that you can show off and sell all over the U.S. How do you choose which cheeses to sell where? I know that's kind of asking, which children do you like best? But I don't know. You have a feel on that, too, it sounds like.
Well, we let the market speak to us.
Yeah.
So for the USA, it's important because our cheese community is quite progressive and pretty on the edge. I think we're actually, in many ways, as far as collective consciousness, we're leading in a lot of ways. You know, we're expanding and raising profiles. We're moving forward where you can almost see some other markets contracting and playing and going into bigger giant channels.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And so thankfully true. they're following us a little bit, and it's contagious. So yeah. We let this market speak to us, and so we'll sometimes choose a cheesemaker for each profile. That's where we're at now.
Oh, interesting.
And then we can get to know certain customers who might prefer one or the other, and we're able to reflect that when we sometimes we'll even mark a wheel for them if it's even something specific. We'll carve their name on the side of the wheel and then ship them the wheel.
Interesting. So you have cheese buyers that are to that degree.
Oh yeah,
choosing the wheels.
Yeah, yeah, either through description and telling us, hey, you know, I want what I got last time, and then we'll make sure it's reflective of very close to that batch.
Even for like Emmentaler, or is it like
more so for Emmentaler?
Really?
Yeah, because Emmentaler is so different, you wouldn't believe it. Like, you know, and it's Emmentaler is a much more delicate, to get the profile, because it's a trickier cheese to sell, mm-hmm. right? So it doesn't have the same illustrious reputation as Le Gruyere AOP right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I did the faux pas right now. I know I used to buy Emmentaler from you, and you have a next level Emmentaler. I mean, you've started the Save the Emmentaler hashtag campaign. I mean, it's like a 200 pound wheel we're talking about that I remember, and it has nuances. It isn't I sometimes think of Emmentaler as a milder cheese, but. Anyway, go on. You were going to say more about it. It's totally different.
Well, just like any cheese, like when you listen to your Conte advertising,
it's
quite literal. That's true with every cheese. But so Emmentaler, we hope isn't just put in a box like, oh, Emmentaler. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so different. There can and many times it's at this point, if we're doing our job right, and we're with a real monger and especially in a cut to order shop, it's like we showed them a new cheese they never tasted before. That's usually the experience. Like, wow, I didn't realize Emmentaler could taste like that. Or I didn't realize there was so much within the category.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, and then you even have to show them how to cut it even, because it's a massive wheel.
There's the whole wheel, which is really
the only way you should difficult. Buy it is the whole wheel. I'm going to help Joe out. Don't buy it
good
in parts.
That.
Buy a whole wheel. If you can sell a whole parm, you can sell a whole Emmentaler.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, it takes even 3 people to move one at the minimum. So whole wheels.
You don't just hoist it between your legs and hope for the best.
I've seen people cut it vertically with someone. You know, I'm not an advocate of that. I like putting it flat on a table and doing a proper Emmentaler grip. So there's a whole wheel cutting. We have videos of that on our YouTube channel. But what's more common is the wedge.
Okay.
We want the wedge to be worked with. It's working with the cheese in closest to its truest form, and to get proper rind distribution, there's a way to break it down that's going to help that, you know, unfortunately the cheese had been put into loaves at some point. I don't know why, I guess to make it easier, but
that's all I can think about is that deli loaf thing with the red markings on the side.
It's if you're in a shop where you're cutting and breaking down wheels, I don't know why you need a loaf. You know, I think loaves should be relegated to busy hotels and cruise ships that need to slice cheese. Fine. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But if you're in a cheese shop, you should be buying Emmentaler in the wedge.
Yeah.
That helps. And the most inconvenient thing is its size. Use it to sell the cheese. Put it on show. Put it in your case. You cut medially. Wrap like glass with little baby pieces on top of it. And
it is a showstopper. I mean, everyone should Google what an actual Emmentaler looks like.
It's an insane thing to make one of those. I mean, 1,200 liters of milk. It takes some guts to make one Emmentaler, I would think. It's a big gamble.
I mean, moving that, even as a curd, a sponge curd, I'm like thinking about the cheesemaker moving that around. Like, he must have designed apparatuses specifically to move this cheese.
Yeah, when you're in the cellars of the cheese dairy, they have like, I refer to like James Cameron and like, you know, the Alien movie or the
Avatar. Sure, I'll take Avatar. Whatever source of inspiration we got here.
They're in the hydraulic, you know, like, you know, those, I don't know if you're a James Cameron Aliens fan or Avatar, you know, he tends to have these hydraulic, but it reminds me of that because there's hydraulic kind of like, they're almost like the arms of the cheesemaker that can help lift each wheel or off the shelf.
Oh, really?
It'll like grab it and it can turn it. And then they'll wash or they'll rub, you know, in the warm cellar. One of the most interesting steps is they'll rub the wheel down with a canvas cloth, which is not very absorbent. And I always thought it was to wipe the fat off, but it's to redistribute the fat that's migrating outwards.
Oh, cool.
So that the crust forms a buttery crust along with the brine. It's a necessary step that's just hundreds of years old.
Is that like an everyday move too?
Almost every wheel must be wiped at least twice a week in the worm cellar. This is the worm cellar step where it's growing its eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fat, the butter fat migrates to the surface for a while. Just until recently on one of my visits, I thought they were wiping it away, but they're actually wiping it around.
Redistributing.
Yeah. That's why that canvas cloth, which can imagine like a burlap, it's not very absorbent. It's the point.
Did you smell the burlap?
It smells like buttery bread. I mean, the whole room.
Okay.
Like a bakery in there, actually.
That's the thing. Like with cheese, like I know I've been in a Pont l'Evêque room. It smells like apples and like malty. You know, it's just like there's certain things that you're like.
Yeah. Malty is, I smell that too. It's like a malty bakery.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful smell. I love it. In the warm cellars.
I'm going to go get Emmentaler after this episode. You're making me hungry. All right, kiddos. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Kara Warren, your host, and Joe Salonia is here, and we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
All right. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, everyone. I'm your host, Kara Warren. I'm here with Joe Salonia of Gormino. We're talking about Emmentaler. We're talking about Swiss. We're saying Happy New Year, Happy 2023. You know, we forgot to do that at the top of the episode, so I'm waking you up in your car right now. I know you're probably driving down whatever interstate. You sales folks, hi, what up to you? And we're looking forward to fancy food. And yeah, that's me and my ramble back into the episode. But Joe's here. He's our natural music man. I'm going to give him a fun one. Joe, what's your favorite karaoke song?
Oh, my God. like, cheese karaoke or regular karaoke?
Oh, you know what? Let's go for both. Because I know that you do a lot of cheese karaoke as well.
Oh, my God. Well, regular karaoke, it depends. It depends on the situation. But
I put a hard one on to you now. This wasn't a softball. All right, what is it? What are we thinking?
There was a memorable moment when it wasn't a cheese set. It was a cheese crowd.
Okay.
Which happens a lot with karaoke, as you know.
Yeah, naturally.
But we did a Led Zeppelin song in Des Moines that went over, like, you might have been there.
I might have been in the corners of the room. It was a whole lot of love by
Led Zeppelin. It was so much fun.
Oh, my God.
Because I got to scream, kind of, you know.
Are you looking forward to Des Moines coming up this year?
I am. I would hope to find that same place, and maybe we could all be there
again. Let's make a party. Let's make an unofficial Cutting the Curd Joe Gormino party.
Oh, and, come on. Don't make it about me. No.
But then I'll put you on the spot. See, I thought you were going to tell me like Sting or Bon Jovi. Well, I had that in mind because I feel like that's your vibe, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, Sting is, we did a Sting song for a cheese-centric one. We did one to the tune of Walking on the Moon. Instead of Walking on the Moon, we did Cutting Lots of Cheese.
Oh, wow.
Giant cuts of what? I don't know. Do you want to hear it?
You want to do it a cappella?
That's the way I usually do it sometimes.
All right, let's rock and roll. I'll give you a few minutes, and then you cut yourself off. Let's see. Right,
it's
let's
quick.
Go.
But, it'd be, you know, to the tune of Walking on the Moon.
Okay.
So, giant cuts are what we'll make, cutting lots of cheese. I hope my wire won't break, cutting lots of cheese. What do I say next? We love cheese together. Cutting lots of cheese. We love cheese forever. We're cutting lots of cheese.
Woo! No way. First ever singing on Cutting the Curd. Joe Salonia cutting a track with us today.
Come on. First time? No way.
First time.
You gotta make that happen all the time. Get all your guests on and make them sing. Come on, why not? We need to have
this
that
is, We're just going to have to do this. We're going to have to get Music Man Joe here. That's a thrill. Thank you. That was amazing. First of all, also, listeners, that in my headphones was super delicious.
Yeah,
that was great. Thank you. That was really cool. I'm shook. All right, now I'll throw it back to the business side. What are you looking forward to in 2023 besides Des Moines, Iowa?
I hope some big wheel cuttings. And it just should apply to anybody selling whatever could be big, you know, to make an event out of big wheel cuttings. This isn't just a Gormino thing. I think that there's so much behind the scenes cutting that I notice. It's like it could be someone cutting I love the more big wheel Emmentaler cuttings, Gruyere. And I want to, you know, even if it's just a quick pause, just to kind of make it a little more of an announced, you know,
like, hey,
emphasis.
We're opening this cheese here at this table.
Get people to understand it, because these days with, you know, especially with the ruling of the Gruyere word in 21 or 22, whatever it was, I think late 21, just being that, just making sure we're flying the flag for Le Gruyere AOP, Emmentaler AOP, these words that unfortunately, according to, you know, Virginia or judges in the USA or whoever is deeming them to be generic, makes no sense to me. That ruling was nonsensical. I don't understand. It's like the sense was like, well, it's already been genericized or whatever word they use.
It's already a generic word.
I don't think I heard about this.
So
yeah,
in the U.S., anyone can use Gruyere on their cheese.
But the example they use, like, it's already been, you know, used so much in Europe and in the USA this way. So why, you know, it's like saying, well, you've pickpocketed this person so much. And they didn't seem to notice, so just keep pickpocketing them. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand why you can't correct it. But as cheese people, we can at least add the prefix and the suffix. Le Gruyere AOP. It's a little bit of a word soup for some customers to be saying it like that all the time. But
sure.
But at least let them hear it once.
Yeah.
So that when they see the whatever brand, I won't name them, these other brands out there, you know, that are in, you know,
everywhere, whatever
that you just use the word Gruyere.
Yeah.
you know, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Is the point. And there's a lot not the same about it.
No. And I think that is hopefully to the consumers and people buying cheese out there, I think it's very important, like a wine label, cheese labels, you read them or you speak to a cheesemonger who they can guide you to the real deal, or at least, you know, you don't get fooled by marketing. You know, that is there's a lot of really good marketing in cheese. So we have to educate people more and more. Yeah, I didn't realize that about the Gruyere name. I must have been asleep. I don't know what I was doing. I'm sorry.
It's you know, hopefully we'll you know, as a cheese community, we'll still uphold the real Le Gruyere OP. And then within that, there's even homework to do about like what you like. You know, there's different affineurs and brands and different profiles and cheesemakers to discover.
Totally. Well, that brings me to a point a little bit about your bio. Like, I've known you so long at Gormino, but like, how did you get into selling Swiss cheese? Like, I spied your LinkedIn and there was a few hidden gems in there. I didn't realize where you worked before. Like, that's so crazy.
Well, at my previous job, I sold the Gormino line.
Yeah. That's okay. That's the connection
and,
there.
And I loved the cheese then, and you know, didn't know enough about Gormino, but
you were a chef at one point, which I think is very interesting. Not everyone goes that path, chef to cheese kid, you know?
But chef by trade, there was, you know, starting a family and was looking for a different lifestyle back in, you know, I guess it was around 2003.
I was going to say the early aughts, guys.
Yeah, it seems like a million. Well, hey, it's 20 years ago now. Incredible. So I'm entering my 20th year. I mean, I feel like it still feels like the first day. But
you're still a kid to me, Joe. I mean, you got the spirit of a 20-something. I wish I envy you. You're like lightning.
It's very immature.
No, it's great. You have to be in cheese. We are selling cheese. How serious can we take ourselves? Like, that's a tough one.
Please kick me if I take myself too seriously. Ooh. Please shake me, do something.
If I see you acting serious at Fancy Food the show this weekend.
Please. Yes. Shake me.
Yes,
something.
I will. But so I'm envious because I've also spied on Instagram. You have a pizza oven. I mean, you're so cool.
Well, that's one of my best friends. Okay. Yeah, he's got what we call the Treehouse Kitchen. And the pizza oven is at his house. We're literal best friends. And he's also been, guest photographer for Gormino. His name is Mike Franklin.
Okay.
Chanky Michael in production. Shout out to him. It's just a play date, you know, for us. I'll bring dough. I'll bring cheese. We'll bring, pork shoulders. We light fires. We cut pineapples. We just play. That's our, he's also a trained chef. So we just have fun, but we always seem to gravitate towards the pizza oven because it's tactile. You roll the dough, you can go a million different directions with pizza.
Why not? And you have great melters. I mean, these are like amazing cheeses for that. Like,
we do play around and put Emmentaler usually.
I mean, it's on hand.
Some purists might say, "What do you mean Emmental on a pizza?" I mean, hey, you know,
there's no raclette on there. There's no Gruyere there.
The Gruyere sometimes, yeah. Raclette has to. I mean, I would love raclette on there. Raclette melts like silk. I mean, I love it.
That's the best. I mean, but so then, like, okay, now let me throw it to you: Sprints and Ativas. How do you just eat those, or do you manage them when you're cooking? I know you don't melt them. So what are you doing with them?
So sprints for sure. I will break into pieces and enjoy them, but I many times will grate it over like the way, you know, I'll finish, it could even be like a carbonara type creation.
Oh really? Oh snap.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's one, just on soup.
Yeah.
You know, just full, you know, I'll treat it like the way you would treat Parmigiano Reggiano.
It's
wonderful. It's full butter fat, but to really, for ours is an alpage Gruyere, alpage sprints rather.
Mm-hmm.
It's behooves you to taste a nugget of that. You know what the Swiss would call mokli. You know,
what does
a nugget,
mean? Like a nugget.
Yeah, it's like a little nugget you break. They call it mokli.
Cool.
And you have it with white wine is typical apéro way to enjoy a break, you know. But Ativas is so symphonic and incredible on its own. I usually just have that, you know.
That's just out. Delicious.
Buckle in and go for the ride with Ativas, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is, so I was going to throw it to you then, because you're a traveling man like myself. traveling lady. What is your favorite road snack? I feel like in Switzerland or in the US, I feel like there's gotta be, like, I always have like certain weird oddities that I eat when I'm out and about. Like, I'm curious, do you have one?
So now you have me thinking. The last stop I made, you know what, this isn't unique. I'll usually get like a meat stick.
Yeah, no, this is what
I love
mean.
Him.
I knew it was gonna be something fun.
It's a meat stick and I mean, I think I even saw like some, there's different brands out there, but the last one I got might've been a Charlito one. I don't know.
Okay.
Meat stick, an apple and some cheese will get me through.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty good.
That's, for USA.
That's a USA snack. Cause I was going to say in France, I always look at the sandwiches, those pre-packed sandwiches at the gas stations. And I'm like, well, that's many layers of poulet. I think I will.
The gas station stops in Europe.
They're nice.
So much
they're
nicer.
Nicer in France, kind of, and then kind of not. There's some weird stories I've heard from some people. We won't say them on air, but this is fun.
But in Switzerland, it probably would be like a croissant or something like
or like a coffee, like a good
coffee. The coffees,
like not a shitty coffee.
There are just so many croissants in Switzerland. You trip over croissants. It's butter city over there, you know?
Do you feel like you're ever arguing about, like, the border? Like, because France is right there. And I feel like people mess up where cheeses are from. Do you ever have that? Like, or just is just everyone smarter and more intelligent with you?
Well, I'm spoiled when I'm there. So I'm usually more on a informational, educational trip in the care of Guarmino when I'm over there. So I don't pick up on the whole border rivalry there. Going back more years in a previous trip before I joined Guarmino, I sensed there was a very blurred line near the Swiss French border.
You have like Conte and Gruyere and they're all like maybe
sure.
Well, I'm trying to think if there's any other cool things that we could talk about in terms of like terroir, even like, because I've never been to Switzerland. It's like the grass is amazing. The mountains are there. I mean, those photos that I see online, everyone traveling over Switzerland, it's just spectacular.
It really is. I'm convinced that if aliens were prospecting our planet and had this, and their mission was to make cheese, there's no way they would not make cheese in Switzerland.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
It's just neutral there. Everyone's like, let's just make cheese, enjoy life. That's what I feel like from what I can see from my vantage point. But
there's so much high pasture grass, though. Like our eyes here, for me at least, I'm from the Northeast. So, you know, the only time I see grass on high pasture, if it's a ski slope, right? That's kind of what we're used to. In Switzerland, you get incredibly high pastures and it's grass. And that grass isn't an accident. That's humans have made that happen for the purposes of agriculture.
Oh.
So there's so many systems that go into making that work and sustainable, which comes down to supporting traditional cheeses, Alpage cheeses, Emmentaler, you know, the Emmental, the pastures of the Emmental. Any pasture, in theory, will be taken over by the forest if there wasn't a purpose to keep cows grazing, eating the grass, and maintaining it.
That's awesome. I have to get there. It's on my bucket list. I'm ashamed that I haven't been there. It's kind of weird.
You have to program it in with a trip that you make to France.
I know. That's what's got to happen.
Country.
Maybe this year, maybe next year. You know, I'm always on the road and up, down, and all around. But this is great. I'm trying to think, is there any other Swiss mentions we should give? Is there any contests or cool new products? Or did I hit most of the cool things that I know you're always talking about and you're just being amazing Joe all the time? So...
Well, you're making it all about me, and thank you, about Guarmino.
Well, and the Guarmino cheesemakers, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Guarmino cheesemakers try to understand the market along with, you know, the team of, you know, which I'm part of, is the marketing and sales team. And, you know, what I love about collectively as a company is that we listen to each other. And, you know, that's one of the things I love most about the team. Where everybody really listens.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I have, my input is embraced and, you know, part of that equation. So it turns out that we're, you know, this past year we launched a blue cheese and a goat cheese.
Oh, cool.
And it's very, very different twist for what our range has mostly been, you know, firm cow cheeses to some extent.
Yeah.
We had a sheep cheese. We still do. A Valley Brebidoux. And, you know, hopefully that's filling a void. You know, we don't want to just make a redundant. Like, hopefully the versions of these cheeses are filling a void. We want to try to fill voids or raise the bar and keep things moving forward, have a compelling reason.
Yeah.
You know, and
like have something different, show it off. And I mean,
there's a lot of good cheeses out there.
Yeah.
There's no shortage right now. Well, it's just about, you know, doing the work to find it and taking care of it. Like, you know,
yeah.
And so hopefully we're part of that conversation. We want to remain relevant.
Mm-hmm.
We want to listen. We want to respect all the cheeses and contribute. We want to help people grow. We want to give. Hopefully what our work is adding value to anybody's cheese program, education. That's the goal usually for us.
Yeah, well said. Amen. Joe, thank you for coming on the show today. This was super magical. A lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that you got to talk about Gormino and the Gormino cheesemakers. It's always a privilege. So thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And thanks for making the time. And I love being here.
Yeah, we got to eat pizza next.
Pizza next. Amazing. Can't wait.
Yeah. So, all right, everyone. You can follow Joe on Instagram at Sting Chef, and you can follow Gormino at Gormino LTD. Plus, you can follow us at Cutting the Curd and myself at Kara Warren. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks. And eat more cheese. And Happy New Year. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.